Hello and welcome to Gun Lawyer. I'm Evan Knappen, and today we have a very special guest, someone I've known for his entire life, and that is my brother, Louis Knappen, who is also an attorney in my firm. And together, we both worked on a case in which we just won the appeal, and it is an outstanding victory and stands for some great principles that you need to know when trying to deal with New Jersey's absurd gun laws. Lou, welcome to the show.
Hello, and I guess you're the gun lawyer, but I'm a gun lawyer too.
We have two gun lawyers on Gun Lawyer. We could even call the show Gun Lawyers.
Yours, if we wanted that's right. To,
because we have plural. We are plural today, very plural. But as long as we don't have plural C, we're good. So, Lou, this case is the Gowrek case, G-O-W-O-R-E-K. And why don't you give us a little overview of what happened to our client?
Okay, right first ahead. Off, I seem to get the cases with the ultimate longest titles ever. I don't know anybody
absolutely.
Else who has
Read
cases.
The entire title of this appellate caption just, into the record because it's absolutely amazing. Please read
just,
it.
Just like the MU case. We call it MU for a reason.
Right.
This is from actually the same courthouse, same judge. It's in the matter of the appeal of the denial of Robert Gowrek's application for a firearms purchaser identification card and three handgun purchase permits, and in the matter of the revocation of Robert Gowrek's firearms purchaser identification card and compelling the sale of his firearms. That is the title.
With that caption, you don't even need an opinion, I think.
I think the caption itself, I don't have to tell you the history there. I don't have to tell you what this case is about because there it is. Everything.
There it is. Everything you need to know. Now, our client was originally denied by his police chief. And why was he denied, Lou?
Let me get into this. Okay, so he applied for a firearms purchaser identification card and three permits to purchase a handgun. And he was denied based on the fact that he had a 1994... So 30 years ago, he had a DWI out of New York, okay? Otherwise, nothing else on his record. So 30 years ago...
Now, first of all, even putting it aside for a moment, a DWI in New Jersey is not even a criminal offense, folks.
That's right.
It's a motor vehicle violation. But New York grades it as a misdemeanor. But nonetheless, we're talking about something 30 years ago,
right,
and his chief of police denied him for that one singular event back in New York decades ago.
That's right. Half a life ago, a youthful indiscretion, whatever it was, from 1994. That's the basis for the denial, and so here we are. And he's a super great person, and this is all that he has. That's it. And of course, though, we're talking about New Jersey, so they're looking for reasons to deny, not reasons to approve. And so they denied based on this one issue. But in response, what happens in this particular county often, if you are denied a firearms purchaser identification card, an application for that, then what the state does is it, or a permit to purchase
it
a handgun.
Escalates.
Yes, for a bit.
It
yes.
escalates.
It, the state then motions to revoke your firearms purchaser identification card. So in other words, especially if you're going, you have one and then you go for permits to purchase handguns because you need that permit for a new handgun, they motion to revoke your firearms purchaser identification card. Now, this also goes back to the days we've discussed already, the MU decision. Then they also moved to compel, moved. They're not doing it anymore, pretty much.
Because we killed it, our firm, MU.
With MU. They also moved to compel the sale of firearms you already possess. Interestingly, Now, in this case, a DWI in New York, the one we're talking about here,
get there, the actual reason that they were denied was not in the interest of public health, safety, and welfare, right?
Yeah.
That is the reason. And the...
It's also the fact
that... That was one of the original reasons given
as well, in addition, because that's this big nebulous catch-all.
Yeah, that's the all-inclusive weasel clause.
Right.
Anytime they want to deny arbitrarily, it's public health, safety, welfare, every time.
So what happened here, this in New York would have been punishable in 1994 by over 6 months, but not more than a year. He was not punished with that at all. He served no jail time. But at the same time, it would have been, they determine the level of an offense. And we all know about like misdemeanors and felonies by the amount of time that you potentially could serve in jail. And this was not even over a year that was even potential for this particular level of DWI that's at issue here. So the
let me just explain.
The
disqualifiers, such as prior convictions, are viewed by their maximum sentence, not by
the conviction
jail time the person got or the conviction,
right,
but rather what is the maximum jail that a person could face?
Right, the sentence
on this conviction if the judge decided to give him the absolute maximum sentence. Now, in New Jersey, the levels of offenses are divided between disorderly persons offenses and what New Jersey calls crimes. Now, that gets confusing to folks, but crimes you can essentially think of as felony level offenses, even though New Jersey doesn't use the word felony.
Where you could go to state jail,
state prison. And you could think of disorderly persons offenses as misdemeanor level offenses, but they don't mm-hmm. call them misdemeanors or felonies because that'd make it too easy for everybody to understand it.
You know? That's true.
So
that's right.
What happens is the maximum penalty in New Jersey for a disorderly person is 6 months. The offense that's below disorderly persons, it's still an offense in New Jersey, is called a petty disorderly persons, and that carries a max of 30 days. If you're convicted in Jersey of what we call a DP or a PDP, disorderly person or petty disorderly person, then that itself is not a disqualifier unless it is a domestic violence disorderly person, at which time it falls under the federal law domestic violence misdemeanor prohibition and New Jersey's prohibition on domestic violence convictions. Now, above DPs, above the so-called misdemeanor in Jersey, are the crimes. And crimes, like I said, are felony level, think of them as
right.
felonies, and they run from first degree to fourth degree, with fourth degree being the lowest, where the maximum jail time is 18 months or a year and a half, of course, for those of us who do math. It ends up being the minimum felony is that 18 months. Third degree carries 5 years, second degree carries 10 years, and first degree carries 20 years as the ordinary term. So there's this gap in New Jersey from 6 months, where it's considered a Jersey misdemeanor, to a year and a half, where it's considered felony level offense in Jersey. And for a good long time, New Jersey took the position that if you had any misdemeanor conviction that carried over 6 months jail, no matter what jurisdiction it occurred in, then they would view that as felony level, and therefore you've been convicted of, quote, a crime, end quote, under New Jersey law. And because you've been convicted of a crime, you would be disqualified from having a gun license, you see. And yet, Lou, tell us, something
okay.
changed.
Yes,
what changed
something.
That
okay.
made this a victory?
Okay, he was denied. We did our. I can. There's a whole bunch more to it. But what changed
right.
was, if you want to just cut to that chase, what changed is in 2022, the legislature changed it to that it has to be punishable by over 1 year for it to be a crime, what we would consider a crime or a felony, not the 6 months.
Well, so, it has to be, if it's an out-of-state conviction,
mm-hmm.
and it does not exceed 1 year, under NJSA 2C44-4, parentheses C, it would now not be considered a crime. And that is major because so many people have issues that are in other states, including New York and Pennsylvania, where those states had the standard misdemeanor jail sentence of a max of a year. It's actually more unusual to find the lower offenses carrying only 6 months. The normal, if you will, nationwide for a misdemeanor would be a year. So lots of folks who were perfectly fine under federal law and under the majority of states, by the way, to have a firearm license, New Jersey was denying. And the reason this is important in this case, because not only does it put it out there finally in the ether, but we're still getting denials mm-hmm. by departments using the 6 month standard. They still are not up to speed on this.
That's absolutely true. They're not. I'd like to point out that our firearm permit applications in New Jersey do not even ask about motor vehicle offenses. They don't even question. It's not even a question on the form. And most people would not even think of that as something that would be needed to be mentioned on a form. And it's like a gotcha if you got your DUI or DWI from out of state in that sense.
New Jersey's form is full of gotchas. And this is a good example of one. And we want our listeners, of course, to be aware of the change in the law. And if you are wrongfully denied based on this, you know, give us a call because this is just outrageous.
I would add not only if you are, but if you have been in the past denied for having something over 6 months punishable conviction, but under 1 year, it's time for you to reapply and get, because you're not ineligible per se anymore.
Right. And a lot of folks don't realize that, and they think that they're just screwed, which originally they were, but they're not. They can now get licensed in New Jersey, and that also includes non-resident carry licenses. So even individuals that are out of state, because New Jersey's shall issue carry license is available to anyone in the U.S. that wishes to get a carry license. You can apply and get it, and the application is simply done online at the state police website. And individuals from out of state will often have to have their records reviewed, and it's done in this same manner. There's no different criteria applied to non-residents versus residents.
Yeah, I'd like to add now in this particular case, at the trial level, we showed that he has no alcohol or substance abuse issues. He has no public health, safety, welfare concerns. He was open about what he is in that sense, this thing that's out there. And so he had nothing but this. Now, of course, we made arguments along this. You have to remember this takes time for the process to work through, but we made range. There's a case out there in the Third Circuit that's very recent, a Bruin type argument, although this predates that, of even if he does have this, he shouldn't be denied. Cause what's our interest here? It's to keep firearms out of dangerous person's hands, and he's not a dangerous person. And we know that.
DWI from 30 years ago doesn't make you violent, doesn't make you have criteria being an alcoholic, you know, another disqualifier Jersey likes to throw out there. There was no other genuine in any way. Was there any, matter of fact, public health, safety, welfare issue here? But that doesn't stop them from
no
making and I'd that like to claim.
I'd like to point out, this was a person who was acting proactively because he had changed addresses and wanted to make sure that he did the right thing by updating his card. And while you're doing that, you might as well ask for a few more purchase permits with the same criteria at that time. So here's somebody who's doing the right thing, updating your card, and this is the response he gets.
Yeah, it is also, that's another area where individuals get set up, by the way. And remember, in New Jersey, if you have a change of address, you have to reapply under law within 30 days to update your card. It is an obligation placed on the cardholder to keep your card accurate. But not pistol purchase permits and not carry permits. They're not address dependent.
No, they're just used. Once you use your permit to purchase, it's used. That's that.
Right, correct. That. But Garwick's case didn't just end with that issue, because it was also another fascinating issue, something we've been fighting
yes.
for a while.
I've been fighting on a lot of this for a while. I pride myself on preserving the record below, as they say, to make sure that I have good appealable issues. And I'm glad to say I was victorious on most of the appealable issues in this case. Raised a lot. I also raised that he's deserving of a jury trial, but that didn't fly. But nonetheless, you're trying to take away trying to take away guns you already owned. It's a forfeiture action, and he deserved a jury trial if that's the case. But that's neither here nor there. So they, at this point, when it comes to this, some of the other issues, particularly I've been fighting. And I'm glad to see that with the new online system, it doesn't seem to be asking for it. But for the longest time, and I've always raised the issue, the courts have been asking for a $50 filing fee for just to file the appeal. And they will not accept the appeal of a denial where you want to be heard before a judge without paying the $50 filing fee. The statute, however, says there shall be no filing fee or pleadings required for an appeal of a firearm permit. And yet they've been doing that for at least the last 5-10 years, and if not earlier. And it's wrong. And it was wrong. And that on appeal was also successful in that the court, I haven't said the end result here. They did end up remanding and vacating his order of denial, which was wonderful. So all of that got vacated. He's not saddled with having to compel sale or a revocation or any of that. And he ended up
having a denial on his record. He does future applications, he doesn't have to answer that question that he was denied.
And he was the filing fee was refunded. So that's now a decision on top.
You got $50 back.
I know that sounds minor, but when you think of how many people apply and appeal, and this is just a state money grab of money to exercise Second Amendment rights. And I think you're going to be talking a little bit about just the exact same thing a little later about how any time they can grab.
Oh, New Jersey doesn't want to grab money, Lou.
From gun owners or people wishing to exercise Second Amendment rights.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, something else I want to mention is that both Lou and I got our C-Care carry license qualifications done at WeShoot. Both of us did, and it was a great experience. And WeShoot, of course, is a friend of the show. And I want to mention that they are a indoor gun range right in Lakewood, New Jersey. They're a great range, and it's a wonderful facility. They treat everybody just like family. I get so many great reports back from listeners that have taken up my advice on going to WeShoot. They have great training, great pro shop. They will get you set up, fitted, trained, and ready to roll to get your carry. If you just want to enjoy a great day at the range, they run all kinds of cool events. WeShoot is in Lakewood, so conveniently right off the parkway. If you want to check out WeShoot, go to their website, which is WeShootUSA.com. They have magnificent photography. They pride themselves on their photography, and you will enjoy just visiting their website. So make sure that you give your business to WeShoot. We Shoot is just a wonderful resource for that community. We need our ranges. Ranges are the places where we shoot, and they're, you know, less and less of them. And without a place to shoot, it's hard to train and be proficient with your guns. So check out WeShootUSA.com. Now, of course, through our fight here on this case and other fights, you know, the idea in Jersey is they keep passing these anti-gun laws and we have to keep fighting them. And a number of times we're fighting the battle for individual rights one person at a time, like our client here that we were happy to be successful. But there is also another wonderful organization, and that's the Association of New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Clubs. And they are bringing federal litigation challenging the obnoxious New Jersey gun laws that have just tormented and created havoc amongst gun owners. And these laws include the absurd so-called assault firearm law, which is really a modern sporting rifle ban with such draconian penalties that it carries, you know, 10 years in state's prison, minimum mandatory 3.5 years for firearms that were 100% legal. And even those that you acquired legally, it doesn't matter. There's no grandfathering. They just want to stick it to us, put us in jail, disenfranchise us of our gun rights, make it so we can't vote. And it's all because, frankly, they hate us. And it shows in how they treat us and what they do. But the state association is there defending against that, defending against the so-called large capacity magazine ban, which is actually the standard capacity magazine ban, and fighting the carry killer bill. Because even though we do finally, after all these years, it's just, I'm so happy to even say it when I say it, we have a shall issue carry permit in New Jersey. But what the other side has done out of their kicking and screaming and hissy fit is pass a law to try to eviscerate the utilitarian value of our carry permit by limiting the places to this absurd degree as to where you can actually carry. It's called the 25 sensitive places and all these things. So the association is battling that out and having great success in knocking back the restrictions placed on us so that we do not have to be victims, but rather defenders. And the association also has a full-time paid lobbyist in Trenton. They have a great newsletter. You get email alerts. Please make sure you belong to the Association of New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Clubs, which is anjrpc.org. anjrpc.org. Join today and be part of the solution. And of course, I cannot fail to shamelessly promote my book, which is New Jersey Gun Law. It is the Bible of New Jersey gun law. It's used by police and lawyers and judges. Hey, it's used by the New Jersey Firearms Unit of the State Police. I was just talking to them about it, and they were talking about their copy of it. And look, I wrote it for you, for the gun owner. It's a labor of love. It's over 500 pages. It's 120 topics, all question and answer, made to be user-friendly so you can navigate through New Jersey's insanity that they call gun safety laws. Yeah, yeah, so much safety built right in. Good grief. It's never about gun safety. It's about taking our rights, and they wouldn't know what gun safety laws are if they fell on them, and many times they are falling on them. But the fact is, get New Jersey gun law. Protect yourself. You don't want to become a victim of New Jersey gun laws. And when you get the book, I have this really cool feature on the new 25th anniversary edition, which is available at evannappin.com. You see the big orange book there. On the front cover is a QR code. Just scan it, and you then are able to subscribe for free, 100% free, to our subscriber portal. You will get email alerts from me, usually within 24 hours of any law change. You can access the archives for any updates to the book. You stay current, the book stays current, and you stay protected. So get your copy today at evannappin.com. Now, speaking of all these licensing, New Jersey Governor Murphy now, he just put forward a legislative budget, and in his budget, he's asking to, drumroll please, increase New Jersey's permit fees. Increase them to the degree, folks, that if you want to get another handgun, just in fees for you to get your other handgun, it's going to cost you $95 extra on top of the price of the handgun. Let me tell you what the fee increases are and what Governor Murphy is proposing. He wants to raise the firearm purchaser identification card price to $100. The current fee is $50. It used to be $5. This is insane. It's to discourage individuals from exercising their Second Amendment rights. It is inflation gone hyper by Murphy. He wants to raise the permit to purchase a handgun fee to $50. It's currently $25. It originally was $2. This will be the second time he's raising permit fees from $5, $2, up to $100, and then to $50. And I'll tell you right now, the Association of New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Clubs is in the courts as we speak, challenging his first fee increase as being unreasonable. And now he's pouring this on. If you want to apply for a duplicate firearms ID card, $50, please. If you want to get a carry permit, it's currently $200. It used to be $20. It's $200. And he wants to increase it to $400 for a 2-year carry permit. $400. You know, we just had the 29th state, South Carolina, and right before South Carolina, the 28th state, Louisiana, get constitutional carry. No permit carry at all. You can actually be a real American in those states and carry with no permit. 29 states have it. And New Jersey wants to charge $400 to just get the permit. This is unacceptable. New Jersey shouldn't be raising fees. They should be passing constitutional carry. And one day we'll get it. You may think that's a stretch. It's not a stretch. As more people carry, as the state gets accustomed to individuals being defenders instead of victims, we will one day have it. But for now, they want to put these licenses out of reach and make it so cost prohibitive. It's part of their anti-gun game. Now, on top of all these fees, they want to raise the NICS check. So now you have your handgun permit. You paid $50 to get it. Or your firearms ID card, you paid $100 to get it. Now when you go to buy a gun, it's another $45. That's right. He wants to raise it from $15 to $45. That means just to buy a hunting shotgun as a new shotgun owner, it's going to cost you $145, almost the price of a top-brake shotgun. Just for the fees. And every new handgun will cost you $50 plus $45, making it $95 just to purchase a new handgun. We have to stop this. You need to contact your legislators, and through the association, you will be getting email alerts and given very easy applications to be able to let the legislators know this is part of the important job here. These fee increases are out of control.
Well,
Lou,
Evan,
I just
like,
hogged a lot of time.
I know. I just want to say, well,
about Carrie. Go right ahead.
Two things.
Go right ahead.
Two things there, I'll say, is one is I think Murphy's Law is any anti-gun law that can happen will happen.
Yeah. You never met an anti-gun law you didn't like, right?
Well, that's Murphy's Law. And
Murphy's Law. Right. Exactly.
Right. Murphy, any anti-gun or anti-freedom Second Amendment that can happen will happen. And I think it's interesting. Raising these fees, I think you have to look at it in terms of because only, and of course I'm being sarcastic here, only the rich really need to protect themselves, not the poor people living in bad neighborhoods. They don't need, who really can't afford, and they barely could afford the firearm to protect themselves. They're gonna be priced out. So it's clear that he doesn't care about the people living in bad neighborhoods who really need the right, perhaps and arguably more. You know, I don't want to say more, but as much as anybody else.
There is a disproportionate number of minorities who are in the lower economic classes. So this is yet another example of institutionalized racism by the so-called party that's supposed to be standing up for the principle that they're constantly violating in their zest to give the screw to the gun owner.
Yeah, taking away the right for them to protect themselves when they live in these in these areas. It's insane.
The people who need it most, law-abiding, honest, hardworking people that where you know, when seconds count, the police are minutes away, maybe even hours away. They need the ability to defend themselves, and they want to make it harder and
price them out. They're going to price them out. That's
them
right.
Out. This is the equivalent of a poll tax for voting. The same idea to discourage after the Civil War, the newly freed blacks from being able to vote and establishing a poll tax, making a price to vote. Well, look, voting is a constitutional right. Having a firearm is a constitutional right. There should be no fees whatsoever to exercise a constitutional right.
There should be no applications to begin with to exercise a constitutional right. I'll put that out there. What this whole decision that I was just talking about, why it should be constitutional. And if you pass your NICS check regarding it, if all these other states, at least these 29, can do it that way, there's no reason why New Jersey can't. And that would save a lot of money because we wouldn't need the huge bureaucracy to back it up.
You're damn right. Now, one of the favorite segments of Gun Lawyer is the GoFu, the gun owner fuck-up. And our GoFu this week is anyone who gets psychiatric or mental health help is jeopardizing their gun rights in New Jersey. That's right. New Jersey actually has structured the firearm application to discourage individuals from seeking mental health help because, well, Lou, why don't you explain how this works?
Sure.
Not just getting committed, but even seeing a doctor.
Yeah, I'll just... Every week I see at least one of these. That's how common this is, how unrare it is, because it's people, and you know, as we talk about law-abiding gun owners and law-abiding criminals in that sense, but these aren't even criminals. These are people who, and I see a lot of it with military, they come back, they suffer from some post-traumatic, a little bit of this, or they've recently had or just anybody who has a death of a dog, a death of a loved one, and they want to get a little grief counseling, or they, we had a guy who years ago, he went just because, he wanted to throw a baseball better. We have a case along those lines, whatever
right,
it is.
That's right. He just, he was in college and his, he was having, what are the yips?
The yips, the yips.
He went to talk to a counselor for the yips.
For performance anxiety that way, or whatever it was, to try and see if he could get over that, just for whatever it is. But so people who are proactive because they see the beginning signs of a little OCD, a little grief, a little depression, a little post-traumatic, whatever it is. And so they want to go nip that in the bud. So they do what you think would be the right thing, and they go to a doctor to try and get some help. Right now in my head, I'm thinking of a person specifically, military served, but he saw like 40 of his comrades wounded and, you know, in serious battle. And it haunts him here and there, but he's not a danger and he went for help. So the application, as opposed to most across the United States, where they just worry about commitments, we've had actually been committed for mental health. They ask, have you ever been, and I'm paraphrasing, treated, observed by any mental health doctor or I'm sorry, by any doctor or psychiatrist or attend any hospital for mental health reasons? And so that broad question on the application form, if you have done one of these, you've gone for grief counseling, you've gone for marriage counseling, and not just, okay, and if it's not just to a, and well, I recommend.
Let's draw the line as to where does it become a firearm issue and where doesn't it? So does, what doctors count and are there any doctors that don't when it comes
to? You have to be careful with doctors, period, doctor. So if it's a psychologist, arguably, it still counts. If it's a psychiatrist, it definitely does. An MD, it's a doctor. He has a doctorate.
Right.
However, I advise if you're going to go, because I'm not saying you shouldn't get some help if you're facing that.
We want people to get their help, but New Jersey creates this thing.
It's chilling.
Now you jeopardize your Second Amendment rights when you try to do it.
So what you want to do,
if you want to try to overcome it, you need to get a report from a doctor, which is going to cost you a lot of money, to say that you're safe for guns. And even though you are, good luck finding doctors willing to say somebody's safe for guns, even though they know they are, because they're so afraid of the liability.
Oh, and I'll add that the statute itself, they want it to be somebody who's licensed in New Jersey. So good luck finding a New Jersey doctor who is pro-gun, or at least will give you a fair shot in that.
Right.
Yeah, this isn't, you know, that's what they're anticipating in that sense. So if you were to, and I'm not saying you shouldn't get help, and I want to make that clear. If you need it, go and get it. But, you know, that comes ahead of your
Second
Amendment.
But make sure you realize that you're going to have to deal with this.
Right.
And let's talk about how you deal with it, because there's two levels when it comes to the mental health issues where there are gofus that can occur.
Yeah.
Number
first off, who you go to.
If you had a commitment, either voluntary or involuntary, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Now the only way you can restore your rights is with a mental health commitment. Period. End of story.
Expungement.
Mental health expungement. You have to get a mental health expungement. It's the only way to restore your rights for a voluntary or involuntary commitment. Now, our firm does mental health expungements. We do a lot of them. But it is costly and it takes time and it is yet a full impediment, even though you just voluntarily went to seek help. But then there's the, have you ever been treated by any doctor,
so this
or
is,
psychiatrist?
That's a question on the form, but it's not a per se disqualifier. But as soon as that is answered in the
what
positive.
What do you mean per se? What do you mean per se? Tell folks
that it's not an absolute disqualifier just because you've gone to see a psychiatrist. It doesn't mean you're barred just because you've done that. But they raise 58.3(c)(3) saying, you have a defect or disease and we know about it and therefore now you must answer, because then the burden is shifted to you to provide a doctor evaluation stating that you're safe for the handling of firearms and not a danger, which the judge may or may not find that, you know, it's
right.
Oh,
so
I've
now you have to pay a doctor for that, and they're going to claim as well you're a danger to public health, safety, welfare, of course. They always throw that in.
Yes.
And now you're going to have to battle it and bring a legal action when you get denied for it to prove to the judge these very things simply because you went to a doctor.
But if you don't mention it and you did have...
Oh, what happens
now? Now you're facing, and they find out, because especially I see during divorces, wives, they know you love your second, and they reveal it. If somebody knows it, but it comes out somehow, maybe the doctor you're currently seeing mentions it in some way. I don't know. It comes out in a lot of weird ways. But they find out about it.
One way it came out. There's a case we had where individual actually paid the doctor cash because they were concerned about this. But unfortunately, went and got prescriptions for the Zoloft or whatever it was, nothing major, but enough, you know, serotonin drug, but used their prescription plan to buy the drugs. And that's how it came out. And what happens is you have to tell the truth all the time. Even if you inadvertently, you write no, you're going to get denied for falsification, and then you can get prosecuted for falsification, which carries up to 5 years in state's prison. And we know certain jurisdictions where you put the wrong answer, they don't even bother denying you. They just criminally charge you with the felony level third degree crime, where you're looking at 5 years in state's prison because you put the wrong answer down.
And this is because you didn't think maybe that this was something that needed to be mentioned or whatnot. So I did want to mention, because we didn't, going back, what if you do have that kind of a scenario where you want to go, consider first going to a licensed counselor. That's something, a licensed, or maybe a religious figure that you trust in a way, you know, some form, or her friends and family.
As long as they're not a doctor, too. Right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Right.
You don't want any of these to be doctors. But if you go into that other realm, you now put yourself in a whole other category, and you need to be aware of it. At least, you know, if you're going to do it, you need to know what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. And there are many that don't. And then later, they're saying,
they're either facing
if I
false,
had known, if I had known, you know, how many times have I heard that, if I had known? So, anyway,
so they either face falsification or they have to challenge it. They have to provide proof that they're not a danger by another doctor saying so.
Exactly. And I'll tell you what else. You can also screw your kids, because we get many times where individuals, as juveniles, they had no control.
That doesn't matter whether you
put them into a mental health facility. That's considered involuntary commitment, and they now have to get a mental health expungement. Look, you're disqualified per se. It's the same as if you're a convicted felon, because when you were 8 years old, your parents thought you needed mental health, when in fact they're just bad parents. But it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I've seen at least a dozen of situations where they didn't think that they had to mention juvenile mental health help. They figured that's juvenile, that doesn't matter. It's not, but the application doesn't say that, and they get screwed on that because you falsified, because you didn't mention that when you just said, like, when you were 11 and there was family turmoil, you went to a family therapy session with a psychiatrist to try and work it out, and you were there with your mother and your dad, but you were part of that. Some people go because they want to work out a marriage or this or that, but they weren't the ones who had the problem. It was the spouse, and yet they are there being treated
right into it, and now you have to deal with it. So beware. Lou, I want to thank you for joining the show and helping our listeners to protect themselves and not be gofus themselves. This is Evan Knappen reminding you that gun laws don't protect honest citizens from criminals. They protect criminals from honest citizens.
Gun Lawyer is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, New York, New York. Reach us by emailing Evan at gun.lawyer. The information and opinions in this broadcast do not constitute legal advice. Consult a licensed attorney in your state.